I'm Gabby's Jules. Great skies over West London. Midweek Premier League football. A lot of stuff going on. Arsenal winning.
Yeah.
Liverpool winning. Manchester United winning. How about that? Big shout out to those boys at Saarbrücken. Another giant killing in the Pokal. But look, let's not kid ourselves. We got to start at Villa Park.
Yeah.
Aston Villa against Manchester City. Honestly, this game, it finished 1-0 to Villa. It could have been, I thought, Villa could have scored 3-4, maybe even more in this game. So uncharacteristic, I thought, from City. But then that was my thinking. But then I thought their defending wasn't good at the weekend against Spurs either.
No, but still, we haven't seen this City team under Guardiola being so dominated by another team, home and away. They've lost, like this season against Arsenal, but that was an even game against Wolves away. But they had a lot of possession. You could make a case for them still to be the best team in those games. But on Wednesday night, they were just second best on everything. Every little statistic that you can look at.
Let's not make the mistake where the better team losing kind of outshines the fact that, which I'm guilty of all the time, and I apologize in advance, outshines the fact that, you know, the slightly less good team or perceived to be less good team beat them.
Yeah.
We need to show some praise for Aston Villa. It's 14 games in a row that they won at home.
In the league, yeah.
But they really wiped the floor.
They destroyed them in a team where the midfield won the game, really. I think, okay, Rodri is out for City, and we know what happens when Rodri is out for City. They'll usually lose, unless they play Young Boys, which is the only team that they beat this season without Rodri. They lost against Newcastle, Arsenal, Wolves, and now Villa. And if you're Unai Emery and you know that there's no Rodri in there, what do you do? I guess you strengthen your midfield. So instead of just playing with Douglas Luiz and Camara, like you've done most of the season, you put Tielemans in there. And then that control that you have over the midfield, which is really very often the key of a game, especially against City, then you get very dominant there. And I thought Douglas Luiz especially bossed the game massively. Camara was excellent. Tielemans was excellent. And those three, especially against Akanji, Stones, a bit of Rico Lewis there, whatever you want, was just too strong, too good.
Douglas Luiz, of course, a Manchester City guy. A guy who came over very young from Manchester City. For whatever reason, they felt he wasn't going to make the grade. Against those midfielders that we saw last night from City, including the ones who came on, Mateus Nunes and whatever, I mean, I thought he certainly outclassed all of them.
Completely,
But
Pep got his team wrong massively.
Let's keep more praise on Villa, though, because, again, I'm sorry, Villa fans, starting with you, Luis Miguel Echegaray, and by the way, it's not a coincidence, I think, that Villa are in the Champions League spots since Luis Miguel Echegaray moved here. Clearly, there's a causal effect there. I'm curious, though, about, you know, he sacrifices Diaby and Zaniolo for this game, who, you know, Zaniolo started the weekend. I think Diaby had two. And you go with Leon Bailey, who maybe is the fastest out of all of them, with Watkins. When I saw that, I thought, all right, you're a little bit, I know you're strengthening the midfield and everything, but you're kind of isolating them. But then I felt what happened in this game, the Villa's midfield was so good that actually they were in the final third a lot of the time, and it wasn't just a case of playing on the counter.
No, you're right, and we didn't mention John McGinn, who was excellent again, but Aston Villa recovered the ball 13 times in the City third. So imagine recovering the ball that high. City are the most press-resistant team, really, in the world. You press them, but they always find a way to get a spare man and find him, and then your press is inefficient. And yet Villa yesterday squeezed them out, pressed them so well, recovered the ball so high, that then you didn't play on the counter because Villa got the ball in the City half anyway. So then you give the ball to Bailey, to Watkins, to McGinn to make a difference. I thought Konsa was good. I thought Lucas Digne was amazing on the left-hand side and everywhere. And what I would say is Unai Emery didn't make a substitution until the 80th minute. So for 80 minutes, Villa played with that intensity, that tempo against the best team in the world without without dropping that intensity. And I think that is so impressive, because you can do for 20 minutes against City, but then somebody gets tired. But to do it for 80 minutes, wow.
Yeah, I'm wondering at what point we're going to stop saying that best team in the world. I'm still going to say it, but I don't know how much longer. And I'll say this. You know, I had the United game on, and I had this game on, and I made little notes, and the two Haaland chances early on.
Yeah.
And then I look at the end, I'm like, oh, look, there's no more City shots. That's weird. That I must have forgotten something. And then I go, two shots on goal in the entire game for Manchester City. I think that has to be a concern as much as some of the defensive foibles. Jules, I think there's a lot to break down in this performance, which I don't think is in isolation. Now, obviously, they've won games before. They've drawn games before.
That's four games in a row now without a win. Three draws and one defeat. The last time that was April 2017. And
in the league.
Yeah.
Now... That two shots on goal, I think you said it was the lowest. Sorry, that's two shots in total on target.
The whole game.
It happened to both be on target. Both came early, as we mentioned, with Erling Haaland.
Yeah.
I thought it was very much a collective performance from Aston Villa, but I also have to highlight individually, I thought Diego Carlos, who's not my favorite player in the world, but he did a tremendous job in this game.
Yeah, he did well. Pau Torres as well, I thought, defensively.
But it felt to me like it was Diego Carlos who engaged Haaland physically for a lot of the game.
I know, but it's easier when there's just no service, because City didn't attack. They didn't create anything. They hardly went forward. They never put Villa on the back foot under pressure, because they didn't have any control in midfield. Even they didn't even try to press. I mean, I've rarely seen City play, even away from home, even in big games, with a medium block, medium, and that's kind of times. I've never seen them hoofing the ball forward, like just clearing the ball and staying super deep and super low like they did in the second half at 0-0. I was like, what is going on? This is the wrong shirt that they're wearing.
Pep talks a lot about players taking responsibility in the collective and stuff like that. Equally, you had quality players out there.
Oh,
Foden,
for sure.
Bernardo Silva, Alvarez. It felt like nobody took charge. And obviously, yes, they're having trouble getting out, as you mentioned before, with turning the ball over 13 times in their own third, right? And trouble getting out at the back. But I'm surprised nobody dropped to help out. Or that Pep didn't think, and we've seen Bernardo do this before, all right, let me put Bernardo deep. There's no Rodri. Bernardo can shield the ball. He can pass the ball. He's got that quality, right? Out of all of them, he's probably the one guy who has that versatility. That didn't happen in the game.
But
that really surprised me.
True, but then they had no other wide options, though. If Doku or Grealish are fit and not suspended, I think Bernardo plays deeper in the game. The fact that Oscar Bob was the only one, maybe you could have brought in and play wide to have Bernardo more central and deeper. Maybe, because it's true... They have a big squad. They spend a lot of money, etc. We know all of that, but it's true that no Grealish, no Doku, no Rodri. It is a bit for what they do and for what they're very good at.
Well,
it's a problem.
I'm sorry, but you can also you can play Alvarez wide, which is where he's played for most of his career, right?
But it's still not. It's still not the same.
There are things you could have done. It's not like all of a sudden, we don't have any players.
I thought, for example, they could have played longer on Haaland. And the battle with Diego Carlos, who is one of the most physical and sometimes too physical, too aggressive centre backs in the game, would have been interesting. But they've done it before against Arsenal. They beat the press by playing long and having De Bruyne very close to Haaland. They could have had Alvarez very close to Ireland and playing off Ireland, but they didn't even try that. It's just it felt that Pep didn't know what to do, that he got his team wrong. That's a fact, because you should never go to Villa Park with that midfield ever. When you've got Kovacic on the bench, when you've got Calvin Phillips on the bench,
and Mateus Nunez.
Yeah, I'm not a Phillips fan at all. But at some point,
I think is a good point, because I'm thinking, if I'm Kovacic or Nunez or Calvin Phillips, all right, Calvin Phillips has probably made peace with it.
But still.
But he's like, I can't play in this game, right? Away from home, when we can't get the ball out of the back and we're struggling so much in midfield. I, who am a midfielder, and in the case of Mateus Nunez and Kovacic, a midfielder who just arrived, I can't start. He would rather play a center back like John Stones, who's just coming back from injury, or Manuel Akanji, who had a tremendous season last year, whatever, but as a defender. Well, I don't know when Akanji became
Beckenbauer.
And also,
they are very good in midfield when they play in midfield because Rodri is next to them.
Rodri,
this is the reason, the main reason why they're okay there, Stones, especially, but also because Rodri is there. You take Rodri out, they are lost, and they were completely lost in that game.
So why do you, I mean, is this Pep overthink? Is this...
I don't know, it's strange. They play Luton on Saturday, so don't tell me that you kind of rested Kovacic or Calvin Phillips or Mateus Nunes because
you were worried about Luton.
So I don't know, it just got it wrong. It happened. Villa were the better team. Maybe they didn't expect the three-man Villa midfield, maybe, although I think it was pretty obvious from the beginning if you looked at the game without Rodri that's what Unai Emery would do, and that's what he did. I don't know, it's almost like a brain freeze from Pep all through it, not at the start with the lineup, and then even through the game with his substitutions.
And by the way, how obviously Rodri, I think, he's served a suspension now, right?
Yeah, that was his third one game, game only. Yeah,
I mean, how big is that suspension again?
So this one is too many yellows, obviously.
Right.
The
but
one
between
that
this and the one that they had before.
Yeah, but that one was a red that was...
Which was entirely unnecessary.
He just lost his head, yeah. This one. I mean, this one, we would need to look again at the yellows that he picked up. Some of them might have been unnecessary. Some might have been like good tactical fouls. I can't remember, to be fair. But, and I know we've talked about this stat before, but if you look at all the games that he didn't play for City this season, and there's the win against Young Boys in the Champions League 3-0 where... But then they lost at Newcastle. They were really not good. So it's not even that they can play well without him and you lose because it was just not happening for you. But they lost and not playing well in all of those games pretty much. And that lack of what he misses. And I was just seeing it's okay. You can be without Rodri for an injury, for a suspension. But from a club like that, with the money that they have, to not have a backup for Rodri is... unprofessional. I'm really sorry, but when you, every sporting director, when they plan their season, when they plan their transfer windows, they have a big board in their office and every position has the two or the three names that players cover that position. So the goalkeepers, you've got three. Right back, you've got three. Left back, you've got three. Centre backs, you've got two and two or three and two and three and three, etc., etc. In the Rodri role, they have Rodri and that's it. How, as a club like Manchester City, you don't have someone to back up, albeit the best midfielder in the world, defensive midfielder in the world, but still, get me someone there. Oh, come on.
The obvious Rodri alternative is Calvin Phillips. So that's why he's...
Clearly not.
What I'm saying is, if you talk about like for like, obviously he is, I think, and I do no disrespect Calvin, but he is a lot worse and hasn't performed well since coming there. I can only assume...
He can't be the replacement because they don't play him when they have to replace Rodri. So he's not the replacement.
But you're asking, but in terms of skill set, Calvin Phillips is the alternative to Rodri. And maybe, you know, there's your answer there. Because Kovacic and Nunez they could have done a job there.
Yeah, I guess.
But obviously those are different sorts of players. He was viewing them in a different light when he signed them. I also think, I think Ederson was poor against Spurs. But I thought in this game he made some really big saves. And I thought some of the other defenders, and maybe it's... Obviously, it's always hard when you lose the ball in the final third and have to react as a defender. But I didn't think Ruben Dias was great.
No.
I thought Gvardiol had another really, really rough outing. And Walker, I heard an ex-pro on television say Walker's the greatest defender in Premier League history. And I don't know if they were making a joke or if I should send Rio Ferdinand or... I mean, you could probably name...
A few.
A few who would be in the conversation. But... I think he's an English defender, to be fair. But still, I thought they really struggled. And I wonder, again, if it isn't this style of play puts a lot of pressure on one-on-one defenders. On defenders having to act one-on-one.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But if you make a mistake in that situation, right? It's not about collective defense anymore. Once you play that way, right?
Yeah, no, that's for sure. As we've said about Ruben Dias before, we mentioned what he did against Chelsea when he air tackled someone, the ball. I saw him against Spurs doing something quite similar, trying to anticipate and being completely out of it and made not much sense. And on the goal, I just think that for Bailey, maybe you don't expect Bailey to come inside onto his right foot, considering how left footed he is. Maybe Gvardiol gets done and is sent to get
twice.
Hot dog. But then I think Ruben Dias takes a bit of a time and he's late. That's the deflection happens. If you're not late, you block the ball. If you're late, then the ball deflects off you and goes in the way it did on the goal. So, yeah, Ruben Dias form, I have to say, have worried me a lot this season. He's certainly not the defender at the level that he was last season.
Let's go back to Villa then, because then the obvious question for me is what... I mean, this is a realistic top four candidate. It has to be at this stage, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, their away form is obviously not as strong. Even Unai said on Wednesday night they should have lost at Bournemouth on Sunday, which is true. They should have.
Last minute equaliser.
Yeah, they should have. They were not good. And away from home, they have struggled. They have struggled and they struggle usually.
But that doesn't mean you can't finish top four.
No, for sure not. If they were not in Europe at all, and I know it's not the Champions League, so I know they can probably do about with the depth they have in their squad to field two really strong teams, interesting teams, let's say, both on Thursdays and on Sundays. And they might be out in Europe in March or something and then have only the Premier League to play for until May and then be very good and very efficient. So, yeah, I think top six, certainly. If you are a Newcastle, a United,
But this is the competition, right? It's Newcastle.
So Liverpool and City and Arsenal are top four guys.
Even though the gap isn't that big, but I mean. I'm with you, right? I mean, I'd say 99.9 for all three of those,
yeah.
Right?
So then that fourth place.
For that fourth place, we're talking Spurs, yeah. Right? We're talking Manchester United,
yeah.
We're talking Newcastle
and Villa.
And we're talking Villa. Yeah. You're not going deeper than that.
No, I don't think so.
Do we want to play the percentage game? Do you want to go out on a limb and play the percentage game?
But even of those four, one is even going to miss out on the top six, which is, when you think about all those clubs, you think like, how can United, Spurs, even Newcastle with the momentum that they have now, finished seventh in the Premier League, and that's because of Villa's form. So if Villa can maintain it, I still don't think they can finish top four. I think they will just, a bit like West Ham did before, I think there's a point where it all gets a bit too much for you, maybe. So
what I would say into this is I think injuries are playing a huge factor this season at so many clubs, not just the big ones, not just in the Premier League. We've seen Real Madrid, we've seen Milan. In the Premier League, you know, we've seen Brighton, Brentford, for example, you know, to name but two. But I think it's evident to me that Spurs, United, and Newcastle have all been really affected by injuries. I don't think that's happened to, obviously, they lost Tyrone Mings.
Yeah.
Although, to be honest, I'm not sure, like this Diego Carlos Torres thing is working really, really well.
Paul Konsa as well.
And when Konsa plays in the middle, they haven't been affected by injuries as much.
That's
so
true.
I'm wondering if that could be the discriminant, maybe. If they're due, if it maybe doesn't happen because of Unai Emery likes to play with his voodoo dolls and keep his players fit.
Yeah. So we said that Villa have won 14 league home games in a row, right?
So they claim.
Yeah. The last time they lost at home in the league was in February against Arsenal. Who is their next opponent? Arsenal on Saturday.
Speaking of...
That's what I'm saying.
Voodoo.
Exactly.
So you're not answering my question. Do we, Baba, we don't want to play percentages because it's too early.
I'm a bit hesitant. I would love them too, and I think they're doing an amazing job. They've been the third best team in the country since Unai took over a year ago. In terms of statistics.
Not in real life.
It's hard to tell right now.
I'll just say this. I wouldn't give anybody more than 30%. I need to take me a long time to figure out the chances, but I wouldn't give any of those four teams right now more than 30% chance. That's how wide open it is to me. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab.
Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough City. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Bruno Fernandes missed a penalty, but Scott McTominay bags two goals as Manchester United beat Chelsea 2-1. And now they're only 3 points behind Manchester City. How about that?
Incredible, isn't it? I mean, I thought they played well in that game. It was very important to win after everything that happened in midweek and everything like that, after the Newcastle game too at the weekend. And we will talk that in the next quick hits. I mean, Scott McTominay, it cracks me up, really. I mean,
what's funny? Why is it funny?
I don't know. I just think I can see the runs that he makes into the box, and it seems that very often he's just in the right place at the right time. He's brilliant.
He could have had that's a skill, he could have too, had that, right?
Yeah, but then you see the third chance, the one that comes onto his left foot, and
it's not his fault. Not everybody's two-footed.
Not even sure what he's doing, but even his idea was wrong. But yeah, I looked the other day. I think they're the only team in the Big Five league not to have drawn a single league game this season.
Right.
So it's only they win or they lose, and that's why they're only 3 points behind City. They're not too far actually from the top four, even from Arsenal point of view.
You're saying if they had 2 points for a win, they'd be further back in the table.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
enough with your anti-United.
No. I'm not anti-United. I've just praised them, so you know it's good.
This looked like a team that's willing to fight, right?
Yeah, I mean, they played on the front foot. They I thought collectively they were good. They pressed well. I mean, I know Chelsea at times struggled to beat the press, but you know, I thought that was good. And talking about United, they had previously banned a number of media organizations, including ESPN, Sky Sports, the Daily Mirror, and the Manchester Evening News, from Ten Hag's pre-match press conference, so the press conference before this Chelsea game, after articles suggesting that there was discontent in the camp.
Yeah, so they came out in a statement, and they were reacting to an article, which, I mean, there were different versions of it, but there were articles which all these outlets had put out. So clearly, well, in fact, not clearly, I'm not revealing anything, they all spoke to the same people who said that, you know, roughly half the squad was against
Ten Hag.
And they said what they're angry about is that before these articles came out, they didn't come to them. In fact, Ten Hag addressed this afterwards. He said they should have come to us first and not gone behind our back printing articles. That's not the right thing to do. We have a good relationship. They can come to us beforehand and we have a debate about it. Now, look, Ten Hag is not a newspaper editor, right? So it's not the job of a newspaper person to come to you and have a debate with you. But I think what he means is they should have gone to him and asked for comment.
Yeah.
And I think that's fair enough. And that's generally what you're taught to do, in my view. Now, obviously, different people have their own standards. But unless you're going to go with something that's really of super high news value and is multiply sourced, and this might have been, I don't know, you have to give a right to reply. And then you know what United's going to do. United say it's not true, and then you can put United declined to comment or whatever,
or
right?
Or deny the allegation,
Now, it's a different story if any one of these people had come out and said and put their name to it.
Yeah, probably.
But, you know, let's face it, right? We live in a world where Princess Caroline is the
Caroline
of Monaco, right?
Okay, yeah.
I'm sure she's a big Monaco fan. And Jason McAteer used to be a talented Irish fullback, played for Liverpool, among other clubs.
Right.
The reality is there are players who have PR people who work for them, and they put these stories in the press to serve their interests. These stories are not made up. It's not like these four outlets get together and say, what lies can we print about United today, right? So that is something that I'm sure Ten Hag and United are aware about, and it's something that they need to address.
And Marcus Rashford was obviously dropped to the bench for this Chelsea game. Not that it might just be in his form, because he's obviously in terrible form, or it might not be the form.
Or it may have something to be with who represents him, PR-wise.
Maybe.
As for Chelsea, Jules, are you seeing progress or are they still treading water?
I'm a bit in between. So I'm not having at all a Cucurella right back, Colwill left back, Disasi, Thiago Silva back four to start with. Is Reece James, was Reece James not fit enough to start the game?
I don't know why.
But only to come on at half time. That made no sense whatsoever. I think when you don't have any control and you can have all the energy you want, and they have good players, so they will create chances. And we saw chances for Mudryk, Sterling, Nico Jackson had a good one that he has to take first time instead of controlling the ball, things like that. So they will steal, and I think their XG was 1.5 or something. But if you don't have a bit of control from Enzo, Caicedo, who clearly were overrun in midfield, then you're going to concede far too much. United had like over 4 XG in that game. And while, okay, the penalty is a high XG, obviously. Right. But for the rest, it's the highest, second highest in the league this season after Chelsea against Spurs when they play with 11 men against 9 for 40 minutes or something. So it's not good enough on that level from a Chelsea point of view. So
yeah, I think that's definitely a concern. I think you're just seeing certain players, even when they play well, and I include Nico Jackson, isn't where they want him to be yet.
No?
And, you know, he played well by Nico Jackson standards, and it's still not there. That was a bad control. Some of his other runs, I thought, were empty. I thought Mudryk,
I mean, he loses the ball on the first goal. That's a terrible mistake.
You know, there's issues with how this team is put together, and it just seems that, you know, it's baby steps from Pochettino. I don't know. Maybe Nkunku comes back.
But I don't think he helps himself to play with that back four to start with. The back four is like the base of your team anyway. Do you see what I mean?
I don't understand. I think he would say he's got injuries, blah, blah. I don't know. I don't get the Reece James thing, but whatever.
Borussia Dortmund are out of the German curb, Gab. They fall 2-0 away at Stuttgart, and Serhou Guirassy keeps scoring again.
He's unbelievable,
so
right?
Good. So good.
Yeah, look, this was another really limp performance from Borussia Dortmund.
Bad.
Hey, look, now they can focus on winning the Champions League, I guess. I don't know. I know what they're saying, but Edin Terzic can't just keep saying, like, oh, we were really bad. We were really bad. Like, it's not taking responsibility. Figure out. Tell me why. You keep changing the forwards, whatever. Figure out a way to play for Füllkrug if you're gonna play Füllkrug as your center forward.
Yeah.
It's really, really disappointing. But big shout out to Stuttgart.
Oh, they're
for real. Yeah. They're for real.
Arsenal stay top of the table with a 4-3 comeback win away to Luton in an absolutely wild game, with Declan Rice getting the winner in the 7th minute of injury time. Jules, this was hairy. You can go all ice, ice, baby, but this was hairy, just like the Wolves game was hairy at the end, and yet they still win.
Yeah, they still won. I mean, the character in that team. you said late winner in the 97th minute. They had a late equalizer at Chelsea, a late winner against United, against City as well.
They were 3-2
against Brentford.
Down. They were 3-2 down
because they didn't defend well on set pieces, and David Raya had a bit of a bad night. But I thought they played well apart from that. They created a lot of chances enough, even before the late fourth goal. I was glad for Kai Havertz, who I thought had a really good game. Gabriel Jesus as well, your best friend. And in the end, I think it's those kind of wins that just bring something extra special. Now, we said they're going to play at Villa on Saturday, so that might be a very different outcome to it. But I think to have that mental strength is something very important.
I think it's really important that you, and I said this after the Wolves game, like, you need to learn about what the weaknesses are. Not just celebrate, and I'm sure at this point Arteta's hammering home.
Yeah.
You conceded 3 goals to Luton Town.
Yeah, yeah.
You need to think about this. You know, you could have conceded against Wolves at the weekend.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's what Arteta's looking at right now. But it's huge. Huge wins.
Liverpool, meanwhile, beat Sheffield United away 2-0 to stay within 2 points of Arsenal. But Gab, this was not easy. Not.
It was very, very tight because the second goal came deep in injury time. I thought Sheffield United and a new boss, Chris Wilder, I thought they had some things to say about the referee. I'm not so much the Van Dijk goal where Ahmed Alshik maybe makes a meal of it. But McAtee, I don't see how that wasn't a penalty. I don't know if there's something I missed. I thought they had every reason to be a little bit concerned. And look, if you're Liverpool, yeah, you're second on the table. But you also know you've got several other notches that you can kick it up to, and you need to kick it up to those
Liverpool
notches.
Liverpool are the best defence in the league, and they've already played away at City, away at Chelsea. They've played away at Newcastle.
Okay, maybe the problem is the attack, but this is not...
No, but I'm just saying...
Liverpool can be a lot better than this.
Yeah, but they're still, even with that, they're still the best defence in the league.
So this is a reminder that maybe... Do we need to take the crown of best team from City and give it to Liverpool?
I don't know if we need.
Or do we give it to the
saying,
top of the table?
This is impressive.
Jurgen Klopp looks snippy in the post-game interview. Maybe because he agrees with me that this was not a great performance.
Maybe.
And when he was, the presenter made a joke about, the 12:30 kickoff, which they have against Palace on Saturday. He said, like, oh, it's your favorite kickoff time. Were you surprised that he looked genuinely annoyed?
I would
really angry.
I would have reacted the same way. I was like, why are you making a joke like this? What is this? Like, this is a post-match interview. The guy comes onto the pitch to be in your little setup.
Right, who is paid to be, by the way.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Yeah. And then you kind of make a joke that he's unhappy. He's been unhappy before about early Saturday kickoffs. But I don't think that's on. For me, I know we disagree on this. I don't think that's on. I don't think you should make a joke like that. I mean, why would you make a joke with Jurgen Klopp in the first place anyway? He's not your friend.
I don't know if it's a joke, but if he just wanted to bring up the topic to see if Klopp said something about yet another 12:30 kickoff.
Say it differently then. Say you play again at 12:30. You don't like this. And Klopp will say, no, I don't like this. This is why, blah, 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 blah. And I know you said Klopp should go and tell his boss to see with the Premier League to stop having them playing early on. Fair enough. But I didn't think that was on at all, and I completely understand what Klopp did.
I don't think it helps Klopp's image, which is generally a very positive one, because then it kind of went back to it. The guy tried to apologize and whatever, and then the way he walked off. I think Klopp probably regrets doing that. We can debate whether... Depends on the relationship you have. This guy who did it, you know, this game was on Amazon. It's not somebody who interviews Klopp regularly.
No, definitely.
Maybe that was what set him off.
Maybe. And we had confirmation as well, Gab, that Joel Matip suffered an ACL injury and is out for the season. Do Liverpool need to go back on the transfer window now, the transfer market, to get another centre back?
I think they do. I know Konate is obviously fit again, started the last game anyway. Yeah. But given the stakes, given what Liverpool are facing, I don't think you can go the rest of the way with three centre backs. You know, you've been in there, especially one of them is Joe Gomez, who's, you know, light and darkness, and also
then you've got Kwanzaa
of injuries, right?
Kwanzaa, who's a young player,
who's young and hasn't played very much.
Yeah,
I would feel better about it if they had that. In fact, ideally, I would get one of those centre backs who can also do a job in defensive midfield. Because while I love the Wataru Endo story and the great goal and blah blah blah, I don't like to see Alexis McAllister playing there. There's certain games when I want more muscle. So that's the perfect world, or maybe it's somebody who can play centre back and play right back as well.
Yeah.
So that maybe you got those options. I think it's a numbers game. Now that you're down to three, I think you have to seriously think about it. Marseille beat up Lyon 3-0 in the fixture that was rearranged after the attack on the Lyon team bus and the injury to then-coach Fabio Grosso, who, of course, was later sacked,
even though
he delivered Lyon's only win of the season, personally.
It was terrible.
Jules, three defeats in a row, last play, 6 points from safety. What do we tell our boy John Texter?
You're in the mud, Johnny. You're absolutely in the mud, and you have a lot of yourself to blame for it. Pierre Sage, who his first game was the defeat at Lens, where actually they played well. Nothing happened at Marseille on Wednesday night. They were terrible, Lyon. I don't know if Pierre Sage or Stone Wise, if you want to call him with his English name, is the right man for the job. I love him. He's got a great story, but I'm not sure this is what you need right now to just get this group together. Start them just grabbing, like, not even playing well. It's not about playing well. It's just getting points now. And whatever way you want to do that, grinding them out. I'm not sure if Pierre Sage is the right guy. So they're looking at Sampaoli. They're looking even at Pep Genizio. I mean, come on.
Sampaoli.
Yeah.
When you need stability at your club, that's who you're going to bring in.
I'm just, yeah. So we will see. But that was a terrible game. And good for Gattuso, because Marseille played well. Front two of Vitinha and Aubameyang. Harit as a 10. I loved the back three. I love the lot of the things that tactically Gattuso did in that game. So
he's getting a chewed out of big Vitinha, isn't he?
He's getting there.
But we still think small Vitinha is still the better Vitinha.
Yeah, I think so.
And both of them are better than Vitinho.
Yes.
Okay, just
definitely. Bayer Leverkusen beat Paderborn in the German Cup 3-1. Gab, they're favorites now, aren't they?
I think so. I mean, it's them or Stuttgart. And obviously, you know, they've got the league to contend. I mean, Stuttgart do too. But then obviously they've got the Champions League as well. I thought this was impressive. I like the fact that Patrick Schick is back, even though Boniface has scored 14 goals.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, again, numbers game in certain competitions, if Schick can do a job of it. Schick, very different from Boniface.
In the Europa League, you meant the Europa League. For the Europa League, I think they've got enough in their squads, you know, to be everywhere.
Brighton come from behind to beat Brentford 2-1 as 18-year-old Jack Hinchelwood scores the winner. Jules, it's one of those stories we love.
Incredible, Gabby. I mean, one, he's got an incredible family legacy in football. His dad played, was a pro. His uncle, his granddad, his other uncle. I mean, everybody in the
family. His great-granddad, too. Fourth-generation footballer.
Yeah, wow, incredible.
And the secret, the real secret? What? His middle name is Italian.
Oh, Luca. My word. And Brighton have those kids keep scoring. Incredible. Bayern have announced the signing of Granada's Spanish wonder kid, Brian Zaragoza. And he's a bargain at 50 million euros.
Yeah, great price. I'm assuming there's some sort of release clause involved. I have not looked into it. I'm just more excited by him.
14 million.
Jules, he's so little. He's 1.64 meters tall.
He's allowed.
He's smaller than Maradona. He's obviously got the dribbling skills.
We saw against Barca an amazing goal.
A tremendous Kunde. Performance yeah. there. He's already been called up by Luis de la Fuente for the Spanish national team. And it's interesting because I think he's different from the other wingers at Bayern. Really interesting to see what he does. 22 years old. Sticking with Bayern, Thomas Tuchel has complained repeatedly about his injuries at center back.
Yeah.
Now he's been linked with a loan move for Clément Lenglet.
What?
Who is at Villa, on loan from Barcelona, and I think has played about as much as you have in the league. Well, he has played Europa League,
He's played, I think, a little bit. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. What, if you're Thomas Tuchel, why would you like... What, you would just want a body like Clément Lenglet? You don't want a good player? I love Clément Lenglet, but...
Or maybe Clément Lenglet has the right agent who's good at getting his clients in the news.
Maybe. I mean, let's move on from Clément Lenglet. The Premier League have sold their domestic rights, Gab, for around $8.4 billion, which is a record. So that's for the four-year period, not per year, obviously.
Yeah. And I've been saying this for a while, it's actually less than what they were getting 10 years ago if you adjust for inflation. These rights, they made a big deal out of this. Oh, look, the rights have gone up by 4%. 4%, not a lot, not compared to when they used to go up by like 30%.
Yeah.
And also, they're including many, many more games in the package. So, the Premier League is the most successful football league in the world by far, by orders of magnitude. It's better run, whatever. I don't think it's a knock on the Premier League. I'm not pointing this out that this is nothing to write home about or nothing to really celebrate. I'm pointing this out to say that I think the value of media rights has hit its ceiling. The international rights are still really, really big, and I do have a column coming up on this, but they're also really big because, and again, they're by far the biggest and the best in the world, but they're also really big because...
There's a lot of countries that put money in.
Well, also one of the biggest buyers is the biggest contracts with beIN Sport, where I don't think they necessarily operate as a business as much as it is as a... You know, as an exercise in BR and growth and whatever. And the second biggest is with Viaplay, which they have a statement up on their, which is the Scandinavian broadcaster.
Yeah.
They have a statement up on their website saying that they're entering bankruptcy proceedings. I think all of this needs to be taken.
That's very true.
But I have to say this to praise the Premier League. They kind of understand that you can't rely on television the way you did in the past. And they've taken contingencies. There's three ways football clubs make money, right? They make money through television, which I think is not going to grow anymore, or at least until somebody figures something else out. You make money through stadiums, and they've obviously invested heavily in stadiums. But the problem with that is it's not like you can build a 250,000-seat stadium. It's not like you can jack up ticket prices, or otherwise the fans get angry.
Yeah, there's a ceiling as well.
And you can make money through... You can get sponsorship and commercial income, which is fine to a point. And I think they've kind of gone down, kind of on a rabbit hole with Crypto Bob and weirdo bookmakers that nobody's ever heard of. I don't know how much longer that's going to continue. So I think all of this to me points that while still remaining super successful, the only way they're going to keep making money is if they can control costs. And I think this harkens towards either a salary cap or something like that. I think that's the direction of travel.
I think what's interesting as well is that Amazon, who currently have some of the rights, not much, but they show games Christmas or Easter, this midweek round was all on Amazon, won't be there in the next round. They've lost their rights. Where we see them with the Zone in Italy, in France, there was clearly not, either their offer was not big enough or didn't want to come again on the Premier League market. But it's quite interesting because in France, for example, we see the next step as we will deal with non-traditional television channels if you want.
So you said that's back, they've had that, right? So Apple will bid, Facebook will bid.
Exactly, everybody.
Google will bid.
Yeah, exactly.
But guess what, they're not.
Clearly not for the Premier League. So I think for the French who are expected a lot on that,
Rights just can't keep growing because there's changes in the model. There's changes in how people watch television. And there's piracy as well. So there's a lot of factors.
That's for sure.
After knocking out Bayern Munich, Saarbrücken have done it again in the German Cup with a 2-0 win over Eintracht Frankfurt, who, let me remind you, are seventh in the Bundesliga.
That's right.
Jules, not bad for amazing, a third division team.
Amazing fairy tale story. The Minos, everything you want to call them. Obviously, they are half French, let's be honest.
Saarbrücken right on the border.
Right on the border with Germany.
Oh, isn't it on the border with Alsace where they actually speak German?
They speak French and German. All of that is the same.
But it's a bunch of people like Arsene Wenger. They're not really French. They're just as German as French.
They're a bit of both. Incredible. And they played well. And they deserve, against Bayern, you could say that they kind of rode their leg a little bit. But yeah, where will they stop? I really hope, I haven't seen the draw. I don't think the draw has been made. Maybe there's another game Thursday night. So I really hope that they can get maybe a kinder draw than Bayern and Frankfurt back to back to go even further in the competition. It's a great story. Some family members of those who lost their lives at Hillsborough have called the government response to the Hillsborough Independent Panel an absolute insult, Gab.
Yeah, so again, it's just a sad story, and it just keeps, it's almost like even after, you know, really having an independent inquiry, even after David Cameron apologized on behalf of the government, it seems like they're just extending this forever in ways that are painful. So the Hillsborough Independent Panel, which was convened to kind of establish more of the facts and what can be done to make sure it doesn't happen again, it delivered its report in 2017. So now nearly 7 years later, it takes nearly 7 years for the government to respond. One of its recommendations was to introduce what they call the duty of candor, which basically meant that you have to have more transparency to prevent cover-ups, and it would be enshrined in the law. Transparency, not just from police officers, but from public servants, because we now know that there was a cover-up at Hillsborough, and people were lied to. They've basically said, no, we don't need to extend it to public servants, and they have their reasons, and you can agree with them or disagree with them. I'm not a lawyer, I'm not qualified to do that. What I find really hard to accept is this happened in 2017, that the recommendation was made, and these people had to wait nearly 7 years for an answer. Yeah. That is the part that's I cannot wrap my head around. Nick Pope will be out for 4 months, and according to reports, David De Gea is open to talking to Newcastle. Wait, are we referencing all these people who have the same guys looking after them?
I don't know, maybe.
Funny how they keep getting in the news.
Yeah.
Would he be a good idea, Jules?
I don't know. Would you trust Dubravka to play at a decent level for 4 months in the Champions League, in the league, where there's a lot of stake? I'm not
so sure.
Would you
trust De Gea, who hasn't played for 6 months?
True. Would you go and get somebody else who's not playing, who's on the bench, for example, in another good club? Would other good clubs in the Premier League allow that? I'm not sure where you go, really. What happens if you sign De Gea and then Pope comes back and De Gea has been good? Well, De Gea is okay to go on the bench for the last 2 months of the season or something?
So I would strongly consider De Gea, also on the basis that in terms of the type of keeper he is, even physically, there's a lot of similarities between him and Pope in terms of kind of like, you know, being sort of the tall, thin, lanky goalkeeper. But I would say, David, dude, you didn't want to go to Saudi. You've hung out. You're coming for 6 months. I will pay you good money, but we do a 6 month deal.
So
because I don't want to do anything to undermine my faith in Nick Pope. If at the end of those 6 months he's done really well, that way he's not on the hook and you're not on the hook.
But they would not give anybody more than 6 months anyway, right?
I don't know. If David De Gea says, "Oh, look, I'll come, but only if you give me, you know, a year and a half or whatever."
Hugo Lloris can come.
Hugo Lloris, there you go. There you go.
David De Gea annoys me because he keeps putting those videos where he trains, right? Have you seen those videos where he trains on his own? Always with an NBA shirt on, like jersey on. But that doesn't even look... It's like me on holidays. Like, what are you doing? Come on, please.
Do you think David De Gea can dunk? I'm pretty sure he can dunk.
Do you think he can dunk? I wonder if he can dunk.
He's got to be like what? Like 6'4"?
6'3"? Yeah, yeah.
Right? He's a professional athlete.
Yeah, but remember, he was never good in the air. So I'm not sure how high he jumps.
Do you think his hands are big enough to
palm hold the ball in one hand?
I don't know. Maybe there's a 200 dunk? I don't know.
We'll ask him.
Hey, you know what, David? If you're watching, send us a video of yourself dunking. We've done this before with a guy from FIFA Pro, right?
Yeah.
Who said he could dunk.
What's his name? Yeah.
And I was
Jonas. Wasn't it Jonas?
Yeah, Jonas Bear Hoffman. I was skeptical that he could dunk. But he was true to his word. He sent us a video of himself dunking.
We were not sure how high the hoop was. Remember? looked a bit, you know, but...
Impressive.
Yeah. Wild stuff at the Women's Nations League, Gab, that finished this midweek. England beat Scotland 6-0. the go out on goal difference because Holland beat Belgium thanks to two injury time goals. So they had a better goal difference before the game that England had to make up. And because of those two late goals, the Dutch are actually going through to the final four with France, Spain and Germany.
Yeah, very exciting stuff. Just simply because it went down to the wire. And
incredible.
I just said it went down to goal difference. What was interesting here is there's a lot of people, and we've talked about this before, that said, wait a minute. It's not just about qualifying for the Nations League. It's also about getting into
the Olympics,
which is a big deal in women's football.
Massive.
It's a really big deal. And people have queried, should England and Scotland have been in the same group, because, as you know, for complicated, stupid reasons which annoy the crap out of me, they're pretending that these are four sovereign countries, right, rather than just four FAs. And so, but the Olympics don't recognize that. So England and Scotland would play in a combined, logically they should combine play in a combined United Kingdom team, since that's the actual country. But no, because they like to make up rules as they go along. They play in something called Team GB, like Great Britain
team.
But anyway, some of the Scottish players would presumably be part of that. So the idea is it could potentially give the appearance of impropriety. We know that's presumably not the case, otherwise Scotland would have allowed England to beat them 10-0, so presumably they played. You just had a lot of drama. This is a situation which, by the way, should be avoided. They should have had a proviso where Scotland cannot be in the same group as England.
Massively.
You've got something at stake. I know it's not a UEFA competition, but still, UEFA, IOC, talk to each other and avoid this.
For sure.
FIFA released the written reasons for banning Luis Rubiales, and they include a submission from FA chairperson Debbie Hewitt, which accuses Rubiales of, quote, cupping and stroking the face of one England player and, quote, kissing another on the face. Jules?
I mean, come on.
This is in addition to the kiss on Jenny Hermoso, which cost him his job. The players, I believe, were Lucy Bronze and Coombs.
Yeah. I mean, this blows my mind even more that the guy... Okay, at least, well, it's not at least. Jenny Hermoso and Rubiales had known each other before. They've talked before to each other. You know, they had a professional relationship as a head of the FA and the best player in the women's team, right?
I'm not defending him, but he knew Lucy Bronze as well because he was involved with her when she went and she played in Spain.
What's the relationship when she played for Barcelona? He's the head of the FA. So once
he saw her, maybe after the game,
they follow each other on Instagram, maybe?
I have no idea.
So because you have that, you can go and like... caress their face and like kiss try to kiss
the
them. I mean, come on. Who does that? This is what world do you live in?
Yeah, what I will say here is, look, I'm glad he's gone. What happened was unacceptable. I don't think you should have this sort of familiarity unless you do have a legit relationship. And again, maybe they do, maybe they don't, where they kiss each other whenever they see each other. I don't know. There's different customs. This is not like the Jenny Hermoso kiss on the mouth. But what I have a serious problem with is... And all of this is on video, by the way. I have several issues with this. All of this happened after the Jenny Hermoso thing. And I wonder about, did this Debbie Hewitt? You noticed all of this at the time, right? This happened at the time. It's not like, I didn't notice at the time.
Maybe she waited for the investigation to start and to say.
Why? Why can't you speak about
it? Lucy Bronze and Laura Coombs is the other one that you mentioned. Maybe they didn't want it to be in the public eye straight away because they didn't want to be... ask question, but okay.
There was a moment here when it looked as if Rubiales was going to hang on as head of the Spanish FA.
Yeah.
And the way I see it, if you care about this issue, and you should care about this issue, as a human being, not just as a woman, the more pressure you can put on him about his behavior towards women and casually touching and whatever, you would have made sure that this story comes out because there's video, right? So I find it extraordinary that the FA were not aware of it. Maybe
they
Lucy Bronze and Coombs, maybe they didn't notice in the heat of the moment, whatever. Maybe they weren't affected. I don't know. But you know that this guy is under investigation. You can't have somebody at the FA watching the video and saying, wait a minute, he did this to our players
too. They did privately, not publicly.
Right, but why not make it public?
Why would you? Maybe because they were just waiting for the investigation. They kept it for the investigation. I don't know.
But you know that realistically with the investigation, FIFA aren't going to ban him unless there is enough public pressure, right? And you know that he was,
maybe.
Even in Spain, this could have helped. This could have been an issue, right? I don't understand why you would just sit on this. How is it possible that nobody notices for 6 months?
Yeah, I mean, look, maybe. I'm glad the outcome is a positive outcome.
Yeah, yeah.
From my view, because, you know, even the fact that he's not recognizing, he's still kind of not really recognizing or apologizing.
No, I mean,
he's not to my satisfaction, shows that, you know, he just doesn't belong there.
Yeah.
But I would hope somebody asked them, wait, why did we sit on this for 6 months?
Yeah, yeah, no, I see what you mean. The final 6 minutes of Valvik's game against Ajax, which was abandoned, remember, due to injury to the Valvik goalkeeper, Etienne Vassen, was dutifully played on Wednesday. The score stayed at 3-2, but it was a nice gesture from Ajax.
You know, we've been really critical of Ajax. You've mocked them for on the table.
Of course.
Mocked them. They keep getting managed by Dutch guys. They can't help it, right? But this was really nice. They produced these scarves that said 6 minutes, and there were about 250 Ajax fans who made the trip from Amsterdam to Waalwijk, and they decided to reimburse their travel. Now, I went on Google Maps.
How far is Valvik?
Because I had an idea.
It's a tube ride. It's a tube ride.
It's not a tube ride. It's about an hour and 20 minutes by car. It's about an hour and a half by on public transport, right? But still, there's 250 people who went there to watch 6 minutes.
Yeah.
It's
a bit more with the warm-up. You stay after for a beer. You know, here you go.
If you're Ajax, you need some good press.
Yes, exactly.
This is good press.
Exactly.
Luis Suarez has said farewell to Gremio. Next stop, Inter Miami, Jules?
Yeah, it was good for Gremio. He scored, assisted, many goals.
He nearly won the title.
Yeah, they nearly won the title. They were very happy with him. I think Inter Miami is the next destination, of course, to be reunited with Leo. He said he did an interview on Uruguayan radio the other night where he said that he needs injections in his knee to be actually playing. So
it's just what I want to hear if I'm about to sign this guy.
No, but I'm sure Jorge Mas and David Beckham and everybody knows about it, Tata Martino, all of that. It's more like he even said that he can't even play football with his boy when they're in the house because his knees just can't, he can hardly walk without the injection. So the guy, either he loves Leo Messi so much that he cannot not go and play a little bit more with him, or he just loves football, or both maybe, loves football so much that he can't stop right now without one more goal at playing with Messi. But other than that, why would you, like, if it's really that bad, I mean, they're his words, it's not me putting stuff in his, he said, like, without injections, I can't play. I can't even play football in the house with my son because my knees are too bad. And yet, you want to go through that again to go. I mean, fair play to him. He must really love football and Messi to do that.
I'm not a doctor. I would hope for his own case sake that he is getting the best possible medical advice and that these injections.
Yeah, I think so.
But look, maybe they're injections.
He takes tablets and everything for the pain.
That's fine. I don't have a problem with you taking tablets
to
play.
No, but it's not right.
It becomes a problem if it can cause lasting damage to you.
But you could see that when he runs anywhere, when he plays, you could see that he doesn't run freely.
But it could also be because he's old. I don't know.
No, but still.
But I'm saying it's a decision you have to make in terms of safeguarding your body. It's only his decision.
Yeah, but he's made it already, right? Because he's going to Inter Miami.
I don't think it's done yet. But But I'm saying, but if you make this decision to play with these injections and whatever, you're free to make that decision. I think you should have all the information.
Yeah,
once you have all the information, you know, you're still going to do that. There's also some athletes who do this. I know it happens all the time in professional wrestling, where they will take these painkillers, or in the NFL even, and say, I'm putting my faith that in 20 years' time, medical science will have reached a level where I won't have this problem. They'll be able to treat me. It's a gamble you're taking.
Yeah, for sure. The UEFA Women's Champions League has a new format, Gab. Is it a good idea?
Yeah, well, I guess since they have the Swiss model in the men's game, they're going Swiss model for the women's as well. They're basically going from 16 to 18 teams. And instead of having, right now they have four groups and it's just like it is now where teams playing each other home and away. They're still only going to play each other six times, but they'll have like a seeding system and it's going to be Swiss model. This is from 2025, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if this generates more interest. I think the way the UEFA... And I've said this before, I'm not picking on them, but the way the UEFA Women's Champions League has been marketed, you know, the broadcaster that they sold them to and everything, this should be a bigger deal.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
And it's not. And I think it's a bit of missed opportunity so far. I think they really need to think about it. They potentially have something valuable.
Yeah.
I'll even go so far, while people know I'm against the Super League, I do think that maybe there is an argument for something Super League-ish.
Yeah. Because, could that be it, though? Could this be a little bit like that?
Yeah, but you're still playing just six games.
Yeah,
but,
true.
You know, yeah, maybe you are on your way to it. You know, maybe there are ways to think about it. I mean, people have highlighted this before, right? One of the things about the women's league here in England, which annoyingly is called the Women's Super League as well,
yeah.
But is that, you know, you've got four or five teams that have all the resources and yeah. they just destroy everybody all the time. Same thing. Well, we saw Barcelona dominating. I don't think that helps a league grow unless yeah. you're the kind of because people, I mean, unless you're a child or a fan of the SEC or a moron, you know, it's not fun to see teams win 10-0. Like, and not at least not how I see football.
No,
I see competitive
yeah.
football, right?
Yeah.
So they need to think about it creatively. I think potentially it's a great resource. I think this could be, let's say, there's no club competition that comes close to international women's game in the women's game in terms of drawing attention, right?
Yeah.
Could this be it? If they're smart, if they come up with the right solutions, I think potentially it could be.
Yeah.
Jude Bellingham has won the Golden Boy Award. Jules, you like your awards. And you especially like this one.
Of course, because I'm a jury in it. So I get to vote, which I'm very happy.
Did you vote
happy.
For Jude Bellingham? Are you allowed to tell us?
I did vote for Jude Bellingham. He won with the biggest...
Well, it's like, Gavi?
Yamal. Yeah, I mean, Gavi won last year, so he could not win again.
Oh my God, wait. No, seriously, who finished second?
Musiala was second, which I think is a fair, I suspect.
Which means he can win it next year.
So Lamine Yamal finished third, so he might win it next year. Or maybe Xavi Simons, who was also in the top five. He was in my top five, too. By the way, I find my top five was the top five, just saying. So, you know, this is good. I love those awards. They also did, like, who was the best sporting director.
Oh, gee, wait. Who won that one?
Edu from Arsenal. Oh! Well done, Edu.
Oh, obvious
best
choice.
Coach. You know, there was a lot of things happening. Everybody was there, nicely dressed, loads of really good guests, good speakers. It's lovely. I know you hate individual awards.
I just never get invited to them because...
Yeah, because you hate them. They know that. Minded, so, you know, yeah. It's like that. Newcastle United are polling fans about redeveloping St. James's Park. Gab, would you like to see it?
This ties back to what I said before. Newcastle realized they're not going to make so much money from TV
yeah.
going forward. So can we make St. James Park bigger? Is it possible? Do we want to build another stadium next to St. James Park, which they've also suggested, and maybe turn the old St. James Park into something else? How can we monetize this? Because there aren't that many ways to do it. This is the reality for football clubs. Emotionally, I mean, first of all, I think this decision belongs to Newcastle fans and season ticket holders. I think they will be respectful to that.
Yeah.
These are just very, very first steps. I don't think they're going to move from that location. They would be stupid to move from that location it is... I was thinking of locations of football grounds in European cities, which I know is kind of a niche thing. I don't know that there's too many better than St. James Park. You know,
from the city centre, you mean?
Yeah.
To where,
I know that Bernabeu is in what has now become sort of the extended city. I mean, and that's obviously right up there.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like out-of-town stadiums.
Nope.
I love the fact that you can walk to the San Siro, but, you know, that's also not really
the
center.
Yeah, it's a bit of a walk.
But it's also a nice part of town.
True.
So
just because that's where you're from.
Well, you know. But seriously, I just think it just shows you everybody's thinking about it. And look, if there's one thing the Saudis are good at, or not just many things, but we know that they're good at building things, right?
Quickly.
And they built a lot of stuff very quickly. So, no, I think it's really important, though, that this fan survey, and I'd love to see for this fan survey also to be public.
Yeah,
so that they know exactly where their fans stand. Back to Leon, Jules. When it rains, it pours. Oh. More bad news has emerged about what might happen if they end up in the relegation playoff.
That's right, Gab, because if you finish third from bottom in Ligue 1, you're going to play a team from the second division who won their like mini playoff, if you want. Home and away ties, and then the winner, obviously, on aggregate either is promoted to Ligue 1 or stays in Ligue 1 if he's the Ligue 1 team. And people have found out that if Lyon are playing that relegation playoff, their home game on June the 2nd won't be able to be played at the Groupama Stadium because that night, June the 2nd, Taylor Swift is in town. And, you know, it's her gig, it's her stadium.
Yeah.
All the tickets have been sold, so there's no way to move that.
Yeah. Lyon are a massive club, but I tell you what, there's many more Swifties out there than there are Lyon fans.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Can they play in the morning at like 8 a.m.? I guess they could. They could reverse the tie, maybe play the first leg at home, even though maybe you lose advantage.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know what they're going to do, or play on like in another ground, like good.
Play Saint-Étienne. Yes, you'll get lots of local support there. They'll really like you there.
Oh my God, what a mess! What a mess. Over to Brazil, where Santos' home defeat against Fortaleza means that they have been relegated from the Brazilian top flight, Gabi, for the first time in their history.
Yeah, now we should mention the Brazilian top flight in terms of being a league where you play everybody home and away and relegation. It's changed over the years. They've had many different formats. It's not like, you know, in Spain or in England where it's been going for like 100 years, the same format. That said, and I think the current format, it dates back roughly to around 2002, 2003. That said, this is Santos. This is a team of Pelé. This is the team that won the Club World Cup. They've won the Libertadores three times. Most recently in 2011, they were Brazilian champions in 2004, where I believe it was that when they had a young Robinho, I think.
Maybe, yeah. Neymar in 2011.
This is one of the great historic clubs in terms of name recognition.
The fans went mad, didn't they, after the game? They burned everything and like they rioted, and you know, they're not.
You can understand also because they, on the last day of the season, the draw would have been enough to keep them up, and that was at home against Fortaleza.
And so, Vasco stayed up instead. They found a winner late, and Palmeiras champions.
Hendrick, how about that? Big shout out to my boys at Palmeiras, Palestra Italia. Here we go, Jules. That brings us to an end, but we got to come back on Monday.
This weekend.
Some big, big games this weekend. I'm hyped and I'm amped. And yes, Catalan jersey. Vamos Girona, maybe. Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.